2:15. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Alpha and Omega Ministries presents The Dividing Line radio broadcast. The Apostle Peter commanded all Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give this answer with gentleness and reverence. Your host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, you can call now by dialing 602-274-1360. That's 602-274-1360. Or if you're out of the Metro Phoenix dialing area, it's 1-888-550-1360. That's 1-888-550-1360. And now, with today's topic, here's James White.
Well, the gloves are coming off, folks. The hatred of the world for the Christian faith, they don't even bother to try to hide it much anymore. I speak of the program this past Monday evening on ABC, The Search for Jesus, as if somehow the real Jesus had been lost. The Search for Jesus, Peter Jennings' 2 or 3 year expose, investigation into the subject of the truth about Jesus Christ, which, if you sat back and watched it, in essence was, if you believe the biblical story, you are a toothless camel jockey from Nazareth, and if you're a scholar, then you can see through all that traditionalist stuff, and you are enlightened, and you understand the truth. That was the basic message of what was presented to us. We're going to be talking about that particular program, and I'm going to provide you with some information, some of which you probably haven't heard before here on The Dividing Line today. But first, a little bit on the way of announcement. This doesn't help any of you who are listening in the year 2001 by the internet or something like that. But for those of you who are in the Arizona area, California area, want to make sure you are aware of something. Specifically, that next Friday evening, July 7th, at the Plummer Auditorium, Fullerton High School, I believe is the location, in Fullerton, California, I will be debating Mr. Timothy Staples, a Roman Catholic apologist, on the subject of papal infallibility. And some of you may recall the fact and Mr. Staples and I have debated before. We debated in 1996 on the subject of sola scriptura, and that particular debate is on our website. If you'd like to listen to it by real audio, you can get the tapes from us. It was quite the interesting debate as well, and quite a exciting time, and I'm sure that this year will be no exception, especially since the audience will be, I think, a majority Roman Catholic audience. Last time I, during the break, had a little Roman Catholic nun chasing me around with a rosary saying, you need to pray to Mary, you need to pray to Mary, you need to pray to Mary. And I was only defending sola scriptura. This time I will be going after the doctrine of papal infallibility. That excites emotions, and it's going to be very interesting. But even if you're not able to go to Fullerton, California, you will be able to listen to Mr. Staples and I debate various issues regarding Roman Catholicism, because this Thursday and Friday, we are going to be in studio with Hank Hanegraaff on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. That means you can call in and you can be a part of the conversation as it takes place. So obviously what we'll be doing is we'll be doing 2 hours in studio on Thursday. That second hour will then be broadcast on Friday. So this Thursday and Friday, July 6th and 7th, we are scheduled currently to be in the studio. And those in the Phoenix area should know that program airs at 3 o'clock currently in the Phoenix area. So I think it's, yeah, it's always 3 o'clock. No, 4 o'clock here in the Phoenix area, 3 o'clock live. Somebody in the control room throwing me messages here that, you know, just trying to confuse me, you know, just trying to do that kind of thing. Anyways, you know when the Bible Answer Man broadcast is on. You can find out for yourself. So that'll be this Thursday and Friday with Timothy Staples. Then Friday night will be the debate on papal infallibility. So you might want to be looking for that. Now, let me read you a little something here. This is from an article entitled, The Coming Radical Reformation, 21 Theses. 21 Theses. I guess we've simplified things since the days of Martin Luther when we had 95, but 21 Theses for the coming Radical Reformation. Number one, the God of the metaphysical age is dead. There is not a personal God out there external to human beings in the material world. We must reckon with a deep crisis in God talk and replace it with talk about whether the universe has meaning and whether human life has purpose. Who do you think wrote that? Who do you think would place as the first of 21 theses of the coming Radical Reformation the assertion, the God of the metaphysical age is dead, there is not a personal God out there external to human beings in the material world? Who would write such a thing? Maybe someone with the American Atheists, the Freedom from Religion Foundation, perhaps? No, those are the words of Robert W. Funk, founder of the Jesus Seminar. Let me read you some more of Robert W. Funk's writings. Second thesis, the doctrine of special creation of the species died with the advent of Darwinism and the new understanding of the age of the earth and magnitude of the physical universe. Special creation goes together with the notion that the earth and human beings are at the center of the galaxy. The galaxy is anthropocentric. The demise of a geocentric universe took the doctrine of special creation with it. So in two theses, we have atheism, we have evolutionary theory, and we have naturalism. Number three, the deliteralization of the story of Adam and Eve in Genesis brought an end to the dogma of original sin as something inherited from the first human being. Death is not punishment for sin, but is entirely natural. And sin is not transmitted from generation to generation by means of male sperm, as suggested by Augustine. So, we have no God, we have no creation, we have no sin. Death is merely natural. We are a naturalistic materialist. Number four, the notion that God interferes with the order of nature from time to time in order to aid or punish is no longer credible, in spite of the fact that most people still believe it. Miracles are an affront to the justice and integrity of God, however understood. Miracles are conceived only as the inexplicable. Otherwise, they contradict the regularity of the order of the physical universe. So what do we have there? Well, Robert W. Funk is a naturalistic materialist. He is an anti-supernaturalist and an atheist. Isn't that lovely? Number five, prayer is meaningless when understood as request addressed to an external God for favor or forgiveness, and meaningless if God does not interfere with the laws of nature. Prayer as praise is a remnant of the age of kingship in the ancient Near East and is beneath the dignity of deity. Prayer should be understood principally as meditation, as listening rather than talking, and as attention to the needs of neighbor. That's number five of the 21 Theses of Robert Funk. And you go, Robert Funk, yes, the founder of the Jesus Seminar. Yes, Robert Funk, the only person that Peter Jennings managed to remember to inform the audience Monday night was a part of the Jesus Seminar. Of course, the majority of people that he interviewed as scholars were a part of the Jesus Seminar, the very organization founded by Robert Funk to attack the Christian faith. He forgot to mention that John Dominic Crossan and Marcus Borg are the other two main spokespeople for the Jesus Seminar. Also forgot to mention that Meyer is a part of the Jesus Seminar. It is amazing, absolutely, positively amazing, that anyone could call the program, The Search for Jesus, an act of journalism. It wasn't journalism. Journalism seeks to find facts. Journalism seeks to present both sides of an argument. There was not even an attempt to present both sides of an argument. What happened Monday evening was a two-hour promotion for an organization that was specifically founded to undercut faith in Scripture and the Christian faith. That's what the Jesus Seminar is. The Jesus Seminar is a group of people that don't believe in Christianity, who have degrees in ancient history and Bible, and who have devoted themselves to presenting to the media in a media-savvy way the most blatant attack upon the Christian faith that has ever been launched. And Peter Jennings was, and ABC News, quote-unquote, was their willing accomplice. That's not news, folks. That's propaganda. And personally, I prefer my anti-Christians straight up, thank you. Let's not call them Bible scholars. Let's call them what they are. They are scholars. There's no question of the fact that they have scholarship, but how they use that scholarship is quite simply laughable. It's laughable. You won't find these people coming on the air to defend their assertions. In fact, some of you know that there is a tape available from Alpha and Omega Ministries, recorded back in 1989, where on a local talk show, I appeared opposite Robert W. Funk, and Dr. Funk and the Jesus Seminar had just determined by voting through the use of dropping various colored marbles into bags, they had discovered through their voting that Jesus never said he was coming back, so he wasn't. And this, a wonderful announcement of the assured results of Bible scholarship, was making its rounds through the media, and so we did a program, and Dr. Funk came on, and Dr. Funk began with his assertions that the Jesus Seminar is the epitome of biblical scholarship. If anyone disagrees with the Jesus Seminar, they're not truly a scholar. In fact, when I mentioned people like F.F. Bruce and Leon Morris, he laughed, and, well, everyone knows that people like F.F. Bruce and Leon Morris, they're just on the fringes of scholarship. And they're not truly scholars. The Guild has rejected them as scholars. Well, who is the Guild? The Guild is the Jesus Seminar. The Jesus Seminar defines scholarship. And Peter Jennings, in essence, bought into their utterly arrogant, completely unfounded claim that they define what scholarship is. And so when I began to challenge the very foundations of Funk's assertions, as some of you have listened to the tape, no, he told us all to go to hell and hung up on us. That's how the Jesus Seminar deals with those that respond to them when they are forced to actually speak with them and give the person at least some amount of time to attempt to ask questions and to make points. That's what you do when you have no answers. And every time that anyone from the Jesus Seminar has made the attempt to interact with anyone who can present facts and can present a cogent argument, they have failed miserably, because when your entire point, when your entire thesis is based upon circular reasoning, it is easy to expose that. Well, that's what the Jesus Seminar is all about. And that's what the Monday Night Program is all about, but you didn't hear much of that, did you? Because that was kept hidden. I really wonder, how much would it have cost for a Christian group to have purchased 2 hours of primetime airtime to present the same kind of program, except with some semblance of balance? I wonder if the Jesus Seminar paid millions of dollars. No, I sort of doubt they did. I've only read 5 of Dr. Funk's theses here. Let me go to the section on Christology, because it is called the Jesus Seminar, isn't it? Well, what does Dr. Funk say about Christology? Thesis number 6. And I'm reading directly here, folks. Quote, "We should give Jesus a demotion. It is no longer credible to think of Jesus as divine. Jesus' divinity goes together with the old theistic way of thinking about God." End quote. That's what he said. We should give Jesus a demotion. That's Robert W. Funk. What do you think about that? Remember, folks, Funk believed all this the day that the Jesus Seminar started. Don't let anybody tell you that the results of their studies were not determined in 1985 when it started. They had already come to all of their conclusions about who Jesus was in 1985. Ever since then, they've simply been spinning in circles and then spitting out news reports that the various and sundry news agencies pick up and publish as the assured results of biblical scholarship, because the news media likes that kind of thing. Number 7. The plot early Christians invented for a divine redeemer. The plot early Christians invented for a divine redeemer figure is as archaic as the mythology in which it is framed. A Jesus who drops down out of heaven, performs some magical act that frees human beings from the power of sin, rises from the dead and returns to heaven is simply no longer credible. The notion that he will return at the end of time and sit in cosmic judgment is equally incredible. We must find a new plot for a more credible Jesus. If you want the exact map, the roadmap for the Jesus seminar, there it is. The biblical Jesus cannot possibly be true, therefore we need to come up with something new. And that's all the Jesus Seminar is about. Facts mean nothing to the Jesus Seminar. Facts are to be used in whatever way you desire to use them to promote this new plot for a credible Jesus. And who determines who a credible Jesus is? Robert W. Funk, John Dominic Crossan, and Marcus Borg determined that on the basis of their own feelings, their own desires, and their hatred of the Christian faith. That's what the Jesus Seminar does. Number 8. By the way, folks, you can get this yourself. This is off of the Westar Institute website. And since I print it from a... here it is. It's www.westarinstitute, W-E-S-T-A-R, institute, that's one word, .org. Go to Jesus Seminar, and you'll be able to find all this under the Robert W. Funk link. So you can check my quotations. I'm reading directly. Number 8. The virgin birth of Jesus is an insult to modern intelligence and should be abandoned. Well, could you see that one in the Monday night program? Let me read it again. The virgin birth of Jesus is an insult to modern intelligence and should be abandoned. In addition, it is a pernicious doctrine that denigrates women. I'm sorry. Number 9. The doctrine of the atonement, the claim that God killed his own son in order to satisfy his thirst for satisfaction, is subrational and subethical. This monstrous doctrine is the stepchild of a primitive sacrificial system in which the gods had to be appeased by offering them some special gift, such as a child or an animal. You hear that? Remember, Peter Jennings presented these people as Bible scholars. If there was a scintilla of journalism involved in that production, somewhere along the line, somebody would have had to have mentioned, well, we should point out that Robert Funk detests biblical Christianity, hates biblical Christianity, and hates those who profess it. Let me read that one more time. Number 9, the doctrine of the atonement, the claim that God killed his own son in order to satisfy his thirst for satisfaction, is subrational and subethical. This monstrous doctrine is the stepchild of a primitive sacrificial system in which the gods had to be appeased by offering them some special gift such as a child or an animal. Number 10. The resurrection of Jesus did not involve the resuscitation of a corpse. Jesus did not rise from the dead, except perhaps in some metaphorical sense. The meaning of the resurrection is that a few of his followers, probably no more than 2 or 3, finally came to understand what he was all about. When the significance of his words and deeds dawned on them, they knew of no other terms in which to express their amazement than to claim that they had seen him alive. You want subrational? There's subrational. That's subrational. That's the most idiotic thing I've ever read, and yet it's presented as biblical scholarship. Unbelievable. Number 11. The expectation that Jesus will return and sit in cosmic judgment is part and parcel of the mythological worldview that is now defunct. I think there's probably a pun there in defunct. Furthermore, it undergirds human lust for the punishment of enemies and evildoers, and the corresponding hope for rewards for the pious and righteous. All apocalyptic elements should be expunged from the Christian agenda. End quote. Number 11. Then there's a section called God's Domain According to Jesus. Now remember, folks, from their perspective, we know almost nothing that Jesus said. From their perspective, they create in their minds what they will accept as a Jesus figure. And then they get together. They've decided what Jesus would or would not say. Then they go through the biblical accounts and say, that sort of sounds a little bit like the Jesus that I'll accept. Or that doesn't sound much like the Jesus I'd accept or not. At all. Then they throw little marbles in a bag. And the result, I hold in my hands the five Gospels, their own translation of the New Testament text, which, not surprisingly, is humbly called the scholar's version, since they are the only scholars, so their version would, of necessity, be the scholar's version. And in it, they use different colors to indicate when something wasn't what Jesus said. That's printed in black. And then they print in another color, in a sort of a teal color. They print things that Jesus, probably didn't say, but there's, sort of a possibility. Specifically, Jesus did not say this, but the ideas contained in it are close to his own. That's the teal color. They call it gray, but it printed out as teal. Then the pink-colored sayings are Jesus probably said something like this. And the red is Jesus undoubtedly said this or something very much like it. The fascinating thing is in the Gospel of John, there's one pink statement, and it happens to come from the other Gospels. Everything else that Jesus said in John, Jesus did not say this. Didn't say it at all. The Gospel of Thomas, which history tells us came from the 2nd century, from Gnostics and had nothing to do with Jesus, has all sorts of stuff in it that's of the various colors. Because these folks think that they can overthrow the canon of the Old Testament, and they can, in essence, canonize a Gnostic gospel, because it gives them something more to say and makes them look scholarly. Anyway, so what they do is they come up with an idea of what Jesus would or would not have said according to their own thinking, their own liking. Don't worry about history. Don't worry about facts. This is just the Jesus I'll accept. And then they apply their scholarship by dropping marbles in bags. Yeah, scholarship. PhDs all. God's Domain According to Jesus. Number 12, Jesus advocates and practices a trust ethic. The kingdom of God for Jesus is characterized by trust in the order of creation and the essential goodness of neighbor. So Jesus was a humanist. That's the only Jesus we'll accept. Here's another one. For Jesus, listen closely here, for Jesus, God's domain is a realm without social boundaries. In that realm, there is neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave nor free, homosexual or heterosexual, friend nor enemy. Sort of caught that little bit of political correctness thrown in there, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Number 15. For Jesus, God's domain has no brokers, no mediators between human beings and divinity. The church has insisted on the necessity of mediators in order to protect its brokerage system. Who's that aimed at? That's aimed at the Roman Catholic Church. Of course it is. Mediators, saints, priests, the sacramental system. Number 16. For Jesus, the kingdom does not require cultic rituals to mark the rites of passage from outsider to insider, from sinner to righteous, from child to adult, from client to broker. That's an interesting one. Let's skip down to the section on the canon because I'll read you the last three of the theses here. This is really good. Number 19. The New Testament is a highly uneven and biased record of Orthodox attempts to invent Christianity. The canon of Scripture adopted by traditional Christianity should be contracted and expanded simultaneously to reflect respect for the old tradition and openness to the new. By the way, where does the new tradition come from? It comes from the Jesus Seminar. I continue. Only the works of strong poets, those who startle us, amaze us with a glimpse of what lies beyond the rim of present sight, should be considered for inclusion. The canon should be a collection of scriptures without a fixed text and without either inside or outside limits, like the myth of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table or the myth of the American West. That should be the canon. Robert W. Funk, Bible scholar. Number 20. The Bible does not contain fixed objective standards of behavior that should govern human behavior for all time. This includes the Ten Commandments as well as the admonitions of Jesus. Finally, number 21. In rearticulating the vision of Jesus, we should take care to express ourselves in the same register as he employed in his parables and aphorisms: paradox, hyperbole, exaggeration, and metaphor. Further, our reconstructions of his vision should be provincial, always subject to modification and correction. There you go, folks. According to the writings of these 21 theses, this view of Robert W. Funk, the founder of the Jesus Seminar, he is an anti-Christian, naturalistic, materialistic atheist who denies the resurrection, the existence of the miraculous, the existence of an objective revelation from God. He is the enemy, folks. He is the opposite of Christianity. So why didn't Peter Jennings tell us that? Why didn't he tell us that the primary source of his quote-unquote scholarship is anti-Christian? Because it was the whole purpose of the program to mock historic Christianity, to present falsehoods as if they are the assured results of Christian scholarship. Just that simple. Let's not pander to political correctness because our enemies aren't doing it. Let's deal with the facts. And the fact is, no facts were presented. All we had were the ipsa dixit, the Thus Saith the Jesus Seminar. Well, folks, the Jesus Seminar has no credibility, and neither any longer does Peter Jennings or ABC News. And we should vote about that by the way we watch television and so on and so forth. We need to take a break. We'll be taking your phone calls at 1-888-550-1360, 602-274-1360. We'll be right back. What's some of the clearest evidence that the Jesus Seminar does not practice sound scholarship? Some of the clearest evidence is the fact that in the opening remarks of the first and initial meeting of the Jesus Seminar, March 21st to the 24th, 1985, in that mecca of conservative Christian thought, Berkeley, California, the entire direction of the Jesus Seminar and what it was going to teach and what it in fact was going to, amazingly enough, discover was laid out. Robert W. Funk, in addressing that initial group, said the following, quote, "We are about to embark on a momentous enterprise. We are going to inquire simply, rigorously, after the voice of Jesus, after what he really said. In this process, we'll be asking a question that borders the sacred, that even abuts blasphemy for many in our society. As a consequence, the course we shall follow may prove hazardous. We may well provoke hostility, but we will set out in spite of the dangers because we are professionals, and because the issue of Jesus is there to be faced, much as Mount Everest confronts the team of climbers. We are not embarking on this venture in a corner. We are going to carry out our work in full public view. We will not only honor the freedom of information, we will insist on the public disclosure of our work, and insofar as it lies within our power, we shall see to it that the public is informed of our judgments. We shall do so not because our wisdom is superior, but because we are committed to public accountability. Yeah, that's why 4 years later, Dr. Funk hung up on me and told me to go to hell. Our basic plan is simple. We intend to examine every fragment of the traditions attached to the name of Jesus in order to determine what he really said. Not his literal words, perhaps, but the substance and style of his utterances. We are in quest of his voice insofar as it can be distinguished from many other voices also preserved in the tradition. We are prepared to bring to bear everything we know and can learn about the form and content, about the formation and transmission of aphorisms and parables, dialogues and debates attributed or attributable to Jesus, in order to carry out our task. Now that's very interesting, but what is the foundation? Listen to these words. Make no mistake, there is widespread and passionate interest in this issue, even among those, ready for this, uninitiated in the higher mysteries of gospel scholarship. I'm sorry, but those words carry such an amount of pompous attitude that it makes me absolutely amazed. Those uninitiated in the higher mysteries of gospel scholarship. The religious establishment has not allowed the intelligence of high scholarship to pass through pastors and priests to a hungry laity. And the radio and TV counterparts of educated clergy have traded in platitudes and pieties and played on the ignorance of the uninformed. A rude and rancorous awakening lies ahead. What we are about takes courage, as I said. We are probing what is most sacred to millions, and hence we will constantly border on blasphemy. We must be prepared to forbear the hostility we shall provoke. At the same time, our work, if carefully and thoughtfully wrought, will spell liberty for millions. It is for the latter that we labor. Do you hear what he said? Liberty for millions. Liberty from what? From the myth of Christianity. That is what they gather for. They labor to present to the public, and oh, are they good at getting hold of the newspaper, getting hold of the radio program? They labor to free millions, to give millions liberty from what? From believing in the archaic, sub-ethical, incredulous belief in what? Well, a personal God, creation, sin, the atonement, miracles, the virgin birth, the resurrection, and the coming of Christ. Do not forget, my friends, that for the Jesus Seminar, liberty is to be rid of God's law, rid of sin, and rid of punishment. That shouldn't surprise anyone who's read their Bible recently. That shouldn't surprise anyone who's read Romans chapter 1 recently. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Their foolish hearts were darkened. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. Remember, these are individuals who are scholars. They are scholars, folks. They've got all the degrees you want. Vanderbilt and all over the place. I mean, there's a whole list. I'm grabbing the five Gospels here. There's a list in the back of the people who work in the Jesus Seminar. Yeah, here it is. Robert W. Funk, Ph.D., Vanderbilt. By the way, if you have questions to ask, 602-274-1360, 1-888-550-1360. We're talking about the Jesus Seminar today. We're talking about the program. From Monday evening, The Search for Jesus. If you'd like to ask some of the questions they asked, now is your time to jump online. Don't be calling here at 5 minutes to with a question that's going to take 15 minutes to answer. Please. 1-888-550-1360, 602-274-1360. Robert W. Funk, Ph.D. Vanderbilt, John Dominic Crosston, D.D., Maynooth College, Ireland. Marcus Borg, he was a big one. Doctor of Philosophy, Oxford University. Yes, indeed. Let's see here. St. Michael's College, Claremont Graduate School for John Daniels. All sorts of Temple University, University of Pennsylvania, all sorts of doctorates all over the place. So these folks have the education. But what does it tell you when someone can sit down in an organization, accept a preconceived vision of Jesus, ignore the existence of the New Testament text, dismiss them as merely biased accounts of a community, dismiss them as having almost any historical relevance whatsoever, bring in materials like the Gospel of Thomas that so clearly comes from a completely foreign worldview, so obviously comes from the second century, does not have in any way, shape, or form the historical documentary evidence for its text that the rest of the New Testament has. What does it say? That you can sit down a group, accept those things, throw marbles in a bag, and call it scholarship. It says that you can have all the facts in the world, but the simple fact of the matter is that sin affects the mind of man. Total depravity is true, and the Jesus Seminar proves it. You can have the degrees, you can know the facts, but there's nothing in a degree after your name that guarantees that you will properly use those facts. And we live in a society that idolizes scholarship. Idolizes scholarship. All through these things, you'll read, Bible scholars have determined X, Y, and Z. I happen to open up the five Gospels here, and I turned the section on the I am sayings of Jesus. There's a section on the I am sayings of Jesus. I am the light of the world. John 8:58, stuff like that. And of course, once you start looking for it, you'll never find it again. But as I read through the discussion, one of the things that immediately was, here it is, page 419 for those of you who have that. Mr. Pierce has put something up on the screen here that I will absolutely admit to you. A, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. Scholarship is misspelled, and it confuses me. Are you possibly a spy for the Jesus Seminar today, trying to confuse me with these little things? No, I can't hear you. We've turned you off.
You can hear me now.
Now I can hear you.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, don't the Moose Lodge guys and all those guys, like, you know, vote in people with the marbles and stuff like that? So this is like Moose Lodge scholarship?
Marbles is spelled M-A-R-B-L-E-S, Rich.
I was in a hurry, and I'm trying to find a good spot here anyway.
I think that's how they do it. Yeah, that's Moose Lodge scholarship using of marbles. But I think they only use two colored marbles in the Moose Lodge, and they use four different colored marbles. Now, it could be very confusing.
Well, what happens if they put a black marble in there?
That means Jesus didn't say it.
Oh, see, in the Moose Lodge, that's how you get kicked out.
That's how you kick the sayings of Jesus out of the canon, too.
So we've got Moose Lodge scholarship.
Yeah, but you can also put in teal-colored, well, gray-colored, and pink-colored and red-colored marbles.
Okay, now, all you Moose Lodgers, don't get mad at me, because I really have no idea how that's done.
I'd like to know what they do with the colored marbles that they don't use during the voting process. That would be interesting to know. But anyways, page 419 of the five Gospels says, the readers of the fourth Gospel are told from the outset who Jesus is and what he is. Many of the I Am sayings are designed in the present form of the gospel to expand on who Jesus is by adding identifying phrases. In virtually every case, the reader is being confronted with the language of the evangelist and not the language of Jesus. So, Jesus never said these things. The evangelist would like you to believe that Jesus said these things, but Jesus didn't actually say these things. And as you read through it, it talks about how scholars recognize that such and so is not the case, and scholars say this. When you have someone saying, scholarship says, immediately, folks, in our society, you need to demythologize scholarship. Scholarship is busy demythologizing Jesus and demythologizing the Bible. We need to be busy demythologizing scholarship. Because the word means nothing. And any scholarship that is meaningful will be able to demonstrate the foundations of its conclusions and will be able to do so without looking at you and saying, well, look, this is just too deep for you. That's the definition of meaningful scholarship. Well, we have one caller online, and we're expecting some others. Why don't you get online, too, at 602-274-1360, 1-888-550-1360. We're going to take a break and be right back. In the local Phoenix dialing area, 1-888-550-1360. If you're outside the Phoenix dialing area, we're talking about the search for Jesus. Peter Jennings' two-hour promotion for the Jesus Seminar under the guise of scholarship. And the attack upon the biblical faith, sponsored by your friendly local ABC News affiliate. And that's exactly what it was, folks. I don't think it's time to be, I think we need to be fair. They weren't fair with us, folks. Let's just let the facts be what the facts are. And the fact is, that was not journalism. That was a blatant attack upon the Christian faith, and the people who put it together knew it. There's no reason to say, maybe Peter Jennings just didn't know. How do you think he got hold of Borg and Crossan and Funk? He had to pick up a phone, had to dial a phone number. And there was purpose in it. So 602-274-1361, 888-550-1360. Let's talk to Wayne in Charlotte, Michigan. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Dr. White. How you doing?
Some folks might think I'm talking a little fast and might be a little hot under the collar today.
I think it's perfectly understandable. I was like one of the millions of people who watched that program on Monday night. And as it started, I told my wife, I said, well, you realize, of course, this is probably going to be a PR piece for the Jesus Seminar. And sure enough, you know, all of the cast of characters started appearing.
Yep.
And but one of the things that concerned me was when he mentioned Peter Jennings' literal words were as to where Jesus was born. Only two Gospels mention it, and they tell it differently. Well, I looked it up, of course. Both Gospels, Matthew and Luke, indicate it was Bethlehem, but they made a big to-do about the birthplace of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And as you said at the beginning, they went to, you know, people on the street, well, where do you think he was born? And then when they wanted to refute this with sound scholarship, of course, they went to someone from the Jesus Seminar. Where did they get the idea that there's some sort of discrepancy in this?
Well, again, it all comes from the liberal mindset in looking at the scriptures. You automatically, basically, the gospel writers are guilty until proven innocent in the thinking of the Jesus Seminar.
Which is another question I have, too. Why do they arrogate all truthfulness and honesty to themselves and all deception and dishonesty to believers of the first century?
It is part and parcel of the primary assumption of the Jesus Seminar. It comes from a view of a liberal view that sadly some evangelicals are afraid, because they want to be accepted by quote-unquote scholarship in the world. They're afraid to identify this even when it appears within Christianity itself. They want to buy into the idea that we need to deal with the biblical texts as if they are the unreliable, late written accounts based upon memory. They don't want to deal with the idea of any type of spiritual aspect of the scriptures, or if they give any type of spiritual aspect of the scriptures, it's not in the writing of the scriptures, but it's only later as we quote-unquote interact with the scriptures. And so really, that's foundational to understanding, sadly, the vast majority of writing biblical scholarship today. Large portion of those who write, especially in Old Testament commentaries and things like that, you walk into a Christian bookstore today, and if they have any commentaries at all, especially in the Old Testament, they basically come from that worldview.
Oh.
Well, so that's where they get it. That's a starting assumption.
Well, because I didn't see it as I read it. I'm saying, where's the discrepancy?
Well, if you were a real scholar like we is, you would get that kind of stuff. But seriously, that's one of the reasons that when Funk was on with me in 1989, one of the things he said to the radio host is, I don't appear on programs with fundamentalists. And the reason is because the worldview, the naturalistic, materialistic worldview of Robert W. Funk, not only is utterly contrary to fundamentalism, but he has no interest in attempting to defend the foundational elements of it. And that's why the Jesus Seminar people will not do the kind of interactive one-on-one type debate with believing scholarship that would expose the foundations of their thinking and the circularity of their reasoning.
Well, if there was any indication of, I don't know how much viewership he had on that program on Monday, but I work with about 25 people, and no one that I worked with had even watched the program, so I think that's part and parcel of the credibility issue that the media has, I think, partially because of programs like this.
Well, certainly there has been a tremendous backlash, but I think they've A, fully expected it, and B, wanted it. I think ABC wanted that kind of reaction. You can't tell me the people that promoted it did not know what they were doing and did not do it purposefully, that they purposefully chose one moderate. There was one moderate.
Yeah, N.T. Wright.
N.T. Wright. That was the only person. And in comparison, if you put together the Jesus Seminar exposure in comparison with the moderate exposure, let's not even worry about a conservative. It was what, 6-7 to 1 easily? Again, so, you know, to call that journalism is absolutely positively ridiculous. It's that's like calling an advertisement for Carnival Cruise Lines an unbiased examination of the travel industry. I mean, that's about the same level.
Well, just to give you a quick indication of, you know, I went to their website the next morning, like 10,000 other people that was trying to give them emails, telling them where they got some things they felt were wrong, not that they were going to listen to them, but there on their website said there was a Bible fact from, it says Luke chapter 2 tells us that the names of the wise men were, you know, and lists what the, traditionally they were, Balthazar and whatever the other two were.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy emailed them and said, you know, you can't even get this type of scholarship correct. You know, go to that. Just even a cursory look will say, we don't even know what their names were or how many there were. But there it is, as a Bible fact right up on their website, which incidentally they changed the next day to tradition. So anyway, hey, Dr. White, I really appreciate your ministry. You're having an impact out here in my life and the life of other people here that I've shared your materials with lots of people. Really appreciate you. Going to keep praying for you, and God bless you.
Well, I appreciate that. Make sure to be praying for us Friday night as we're debating Tim Staples and Fullerton.
We'll do. Is there another person waiting in line? Because I have another question for
No,
you.
Go ahead.
I listen to these debates with Catholics, and I was raised in a Roman Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to them, and it's so clear to me that you win these debates, and I kind of feel like when I listen to him, like I'm listening to Dr. Laura, where someone calls in and says the most wild thing. You're going, and you're thinking, that person doesn't realize she's going to get all over them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I listen to your debates, and I'm like, why do these guys go back to a debate?
Well, you got to realize, for most of them, they really do believe that they are winning this debate. I'll give you one exception to that, though. Jerry Mattetix has, in conversations with others, not only admitted to losing a number of our debates, including the Mary debate, but to my knowledge, has only claimed to win one of 12 we've done together. So, you know, I'd sort of figure if I felt I was 1-11, I might be wondering why I'm doing what I'm doing. But you got to realize, when Tim Staples and I debated on Sola Scriptura in 96, there were two lines of people waiting at microphones to ask questions during the question-answer period. Mm-hmm. And during that period of time, a number of his students are asking questions. At one point, one guy is just so zealous, he just yells out in front of the whole audience, "The Eucharist!" And everybody claps and applauds and thinks it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, they won.
So, yeah, you know, hey, there you go.
There you go.
I beat
that's
you.
All of
it. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you gotta. Just recognize that that's a part of what's going on there. So will we just do it so that other people can hear the truth and can understand it and trust that it's a blessing to folks like yourself? You may not be able to be there, but I bet you'll get the tape.
Well, we're anxiously awaiting that 12-tape series whenever they get
that's
produced.
Right.
So
that's right.
Thanks a lot, Dr. White.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye. Well, that'll do it for the dividing line today. I hope that some of the things we shared with you, you'll be able to use to share with other individuals. There's a lot of discussions about that program around the water coolers at work, and I hope that was useful to you. We'll be back again next week on the Dividing Line. Pray for us Friday night. Remember, the Bible Answer Man broadcast coming Thursday night with Tim Staples. Pray for that as well. Thanks for being with us. God bless.
The Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-0318 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracts. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for The Dividing Line.